Okay, today's class is on communication.
Amen.
The unfortunate thing is I really didn't tell Barb we were doing it until last night.
No.
But I'm fine. Okay, all right. Well, I did want to let you guys know that Barb and I do have the perfect marriage.
Yes.
Just thought I'd start right there. So, hey, imitate us and you will be fine. Okay, we have deep convictions about communication in the marriage. It has salvaged our marriage many times. It gets us prepared for, what's coming, how we're feeling, all of the above. Miscommunication will cause much strife, if you haven't noticed. A lot of strife that is unnecessary in the marriage, just because of a lack of communication. Now, there's a book called Men Are from Mars and Women Are from Venus. Okay, now, the whole idea of that book is that they don't think alike. They're two different aliens put together, and you're not supposed to assume you know how the other person thinks. All right? So, husbands, if you think, why are you feeling that way, don't assume. Okay? It needs to be all talked out, right? Yeah. Differences in the marriage are to make the marriage stronger and more exciting, not to tear us apart. Communication is important to God, right? He gave us the Bible to communicate to us, right?
That's right.
He put people in our lives. He put, He got nature. He talks to us that way. There's a lot of examples in the Bibles that he communicates to us. There's the parables. Jesus saying, okay, let me try to communicate this to you in a way you can understand. He communicated about his life, how he lived. A ton of Old Testament examples, right? And bottom line is God needs to communicate to us, right? And we need to communicate to each other. Now, for those of you who are Old Testament scholars, you will remember that the people in the Old Testament decided that they were going to build, this building to the heavens. Right? Do you guys remember that?
Yes.
Babylon, right? And what happened? You know, God saw that their unity, with their unity, they could do anything, right? And so what did God do to stop them? They confused their speaking, all right? And he knew that if they couldn't communicate, they would not succeed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that's where we get the word babble from. All right? Is that funny?
No.
Okay. All right, let's go to James chapter 1. Excuse me. I've got all this stuff going on in my head. Please excuse me. James chapter 1. You know, how we pray says a lot to God about our communication with Him also. And really, when you think about that, it's the same with our relationship with each other. What you communicate, it's not just what you say, it's how you say it, it's your stance, it's all sorts of things that communicate to one another. Now, when Barb and I first met, all right, and I'm assuming a lot of you, when you guys first met, the communication is a lot different in the beginning. Am I right?
Yeah.
You know, you kind of got that giggly kind of, and you want to talk to each other all the time, and you're excited about, I can't wait to talk to him, and this and this and that. And you're aggressive to get the time to talk, and then all of a sudden you get married, all right, and then things change. You know, you're easily distracted, there's things that get in the way, as you guys will soon see. You'll feel like there's always time to talk, but we never do, right? And we need that time to talk. We got to make it happen. And the husband won't get it, you know, and the woman is like, what is wrong? And the husband will say, I'm not a mind reader, okay? Have you used that one? I'm not a mind reader. And the wife will say, could you shut off the Bears game, huh?
What?
Could you shut the news off? Could you quit reading the paper? No, I'm listening. And really, does she feel like he's really engaged in that conversation? No. The answer is no. Let me help you out.
Oh.
And then he's feeling like, well, she's just always nagging me. She's always wanting my time, so on and so forth. These are things that happen. Look in James chapter 1, starting verse 19. It says, my dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like a man who looks at his face in a mirror, and after looking at himself, goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But the man who looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues to do this, not forgetting what he has heard, but doing it, he will be blessed in what he does. Now, most of you have probably read this before. There's a lot of stuff in here. And we could do a weekend on this whole thing. But he says, you know, we need to be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. All right? Why? Well, because anger doesn't, number one, he says, bring about the righteous life. But anger does not, it destroys the communication process. All right? The person's getting defensive. And when let's say you're on the defense. Are you listening to what the person is saying anymore?
No.
It shuts it down. And they say that's why you have two ears and one mouth, right? You should listen more than you speak. All right? And it is a pride thing. You know, he says, therefore get rid of all moral filth. Humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Now, God's talking about communication here. He's even saying, my communication to you. Listen to what I'm saying. Now, if we're prideful, we won't listen.
Nope.
All right? But let's say I'm talking to Barb, and I'm just telling her what I'm, you know, and I'm not listening. What does that communicate to Barb? Bottom line is, she's not going to feel like what she has to say is important. All right? Listening says, what you have to tell me is important to me. That's just humility. You know, Philippians chapter 2 talks about in humility, consider others better than yourselves. And so, really, it's an issue of pride because what we try to do is push our point. Our issue is more important than what you have to say. Husbands, let me just tell you right now, if you're quick to listen to what she has to say, she is going to be much more open to hearing what you have to say. Humility breeds humility. You want to add anything here at this point?
No.
Good. All right. No, I'm kidding. All right. The anger thing, guys. You know, that can get out of line. It can get ugly fast. All right? And really, if we were to see ourselves, how we look when we're in the battle, in the anger zone, all right, I think it would convict us not to go there. Mm-hmm. I know of two couples that used a camcorder in their fight, okay? Not that the other couple was in agreement. The other person was in agreement. They pulled it out. One was a brother, pulled out the camcorder, and with like a tool, like, I'm going to use this, right? Well, how does that help the marriage?
Yeah.
Huh? And then there was the one where a woman did it to her husband. But now here's the thing, not disciples. She used it on her husband. He came home drunk, and she filmed him and tried to talk to him, and it broke him. He just wept. And see, we don't realize how ugly we look. Well, that's why he's talking about the mirror. He says, you just don't look at a mirror and forget what you look like, you know. Why? Because then you don't change. It's got to impact. It's got to hit our hearts. This is a mirror of the way we should be. The Bible gives us a lot of direction. I'll tell you a little story here. One time I went to church, and I was supposed to get there early. I had all this stuff I had to take care of, right? And we lived pretty close, about 3 blocks from the church building.
Oh,
all right? It was phenomenal. Anyways, so I get there early, and I'm doing all this stuff, and then I'm talking to people, talking. Finally, a brother says to me, I really like what you did with your hair. sounds like. Uh-oh, what does that mean? Ran into the bathroom, and I must have just dried my hair, and that was it. Okay? And it was like, okay, I'm glad I only live three blocks away.
Yeah.
They will run home, take care of that thing. But the point being is, we can look very embarrassing if we see how we look in our communication. And it's weird because, you know, there's a proverb that says, in fact, I think I have it written down here. When words are many, sin is not absent, but he who holds his tongue is wise. You know, if somebody talks all the time, once again, it's a pride thing to think what they have to say is more important than anybody else. But Marty Fuqua used to say, if you give a person enough rope, they'll hang themselves. So a lot of times when I'm studying the Bible with someone, or I'm in communication, or doing a discipling time where I'm getting with a married couple, I'll just ask a lot of questions. Because eventually, it's going to come out. Something's going to come out. And if someone's in the wrong, and they keep talking, they're going to end up hanging themselves. Now, I shared this before, I don't know if you guys know this. I learned this. I became wise, okay? And I realized, Barb and I, when we were being discipled by the Mainses in Milwaukee, I realized if I just shut my mouth, I'll get out of 90% of the heat, okay? And so we'd sit down, we'd talk, and how are you guys doing? And let's say Barb just starts, well, Jay, this is... And I just learned to listen and play the humble card, okay? A few weeks into this, we've been doing this for a while, Kevin pulls me aside, I know what you're doing. Mr. Humble, you know, that kind of thing. Realize, you know, it works, but you can't manipulate it. Do you have anything to say? Go for it.
Well, communication starts in the morning when you wake up. You know, it's not just what you say. It's how your attitude is. It's how you carry yourself in the house. It's how you answer a question. You know, it's everything. And I tend to get up earlier than most people in my house, and so therefore my mind is already going. It's clicking. You know, I've already done my to-do list. I've da-da-da-da. So my nature is that when I wake people up, I've already got, you know, five things on my plate thinking, this is what you need to take care of or where you need to go or da-da-da-da, you know. And so they can be coming out of a sleep and feeling like, what just hit me? You know, what just hit me? The to-do list for the year? I mean, that's how they can feel. And I can even do that with the kids. And so I have to really think in the morning that even when I start, when everybody comes down to the table or whatever, just how I communicate to them at that moment. Because that sets the tone pretty much for the day.
Yep.
In so many ways.
Yep.
And it sets it, and if you have children, you'll know, but if you have a spouse, it definitely sets the tone for the house. And, you know, there's the saying, if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy. There's so much truth to that.
Yeah.
There is so much truth to that. And, you know, we as women have to take responsibility for that. And we do set the tone for the house. And, you know, in the house, there's so many things that need to get done. There's so much interaction and traffic through the house that we need to be able to communicate. So go the extra mile of communication. Because otherwise, either you get frustrated or somebody gets frustrated, and then everything's a breakdown. And so it's very important. And so we as a family have family meetings regularly, very often, I guess I should say, because there's always situations. And what one person does affects the family. And, you know, growing as a family, you know, no one ever wants to think what they do really affects other people. We wanted to think that it's just ours. You know, it's just us. It's not really affecting anyone. But when we pull everyone together and kids want to do something, they want to have someone over, they want to have something, we take a pull as a family because all the interaction in the house does affect the family.
Yep.
And that's a great lesson to learn. We're trying to teach that to our children because it was a hard lesson even for us to learn in our marriage. Because when you sin, when you get angry, well, I got angry, I'll say I'm sorry. But there are ripple effects to that for what you say and what you do. And I found out for myself, I wasn't taught as a child to deal with my feelings. I just wasn't. Basically, no one ever asked, how do you feel? I don't even think I was ever, you know, not that I ever consciously ever remember that being asked of me. You just did your stuff. You did your work. You got up in the morning, you did your work, and you went to school, and, I'm not saying my parents were insensitive. It was just the way life was, and probably if you ask most of my friends from high school, they were probably the same way. I think as disciples, we're so fortunate to be trained and taught to deal with our feelings. Because as a child, my things just built up of how I felt, and I just got mad. I just was angry. And so it wasn't until after I was married that I had to learn to talk about how I felt on a daily basis. And sometimes it's more than once a day. But if I don't do that, I explode at some point. And it might not be related to anything. It's just the thing that just broke the camel's back, the straw, you know, the saying. And so I've had to train myself to do that. And if you're not used to doing that, you have to train yourself to do that. And sometimes your spouse is a good person to talk to, and sometimes they're not. It just depends on your interactions and how you work. There was a point in time where we could not help each other. We couldn't. We were told very specifically, do not communicate that with each other because you cannot help each other because you're on such a tight rope and you're so close to always being in a fight that just do not do that. And so you have to get input on what to do. And now we're past those things and we can help each other. But, you know, there's points where we couldn't help each other. We were told specifically, do not talk to each other about those things. And I think the other thing that makes me angry is when things get so out of control. And it's not even so out of control, but in my mind it's so out of control.
Yep.
Or it's just not going the way I thought it should go. And I get angry. It's the, you know, you come home and you thought something would be done, or, you know, you asked something to be done specifically and it's not done. I get angry about that. That's my sin. But instead of handling it righteously, which could have a better effect, my anger sometimes has a negative effect, and they'll think, well, I can't make mom happy no matter what I do, or I can't make my wife happy no matter what I do. So we have to take responsibility for how we communicate, what we've communicated in the past. Sometimes we to break those patterns and to break those to break that ripple effect, we have to take responsibility. And sometimes that's hard to do, especially if it's your spouse. There has to be a lot of forgiveness, and there has to be a lot of grace that's extended. But then when you have children, too, it has to even go even further.
Yep.
So, that's what I want to say right now.
Awesome.
You know, in fact, let's turn to chapter 4. We're going to talk a little bit about anger. One of the things, too, if you have kids, you got to realize that they're going to imitate how you communicate to each other. It is amazing how quickly they'll learn. If you're kind in how you talk, you're patient, all that, they initially won't do that, but you're training them for the long time. And you can use yourself as an example. Okay, when we talk, look at this, look at that. But if you're angry at each other or you're angry at, you yell at the kids, they learn that, okay, it's okay for me to yell at my sister, at my brother. And once you got all the kids, and you know, it can get just chaotic in the household if you haven't learned to train people how to talk to one another. Okay, let's talk about anger. All right, chapter 4, verse 1. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't you know that they come from your desires that battle within you? You want something, but don't get it. You kill and covet, but you cannot have what you want. You quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. You adulterous people, don't you know that friendship with the world is hatred toward God? And then verse 6, he says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. All right, what causes fights and quarrels? All right, it's a self-focus, but he says, you want something, but you don't get it.
Yeah.
All right? And for some reason, we have learned that if I don't get what I want, maybe I can speak louder, and that'll help. Or maybe I'll get angry, and that'll help. Whatever unrighteous thing, And sometimes it does help. Then you do get what you want. And people back off and, okay, ooh, sorry. and people see that works, so then they continue to do that. And he says, listen, you know, that's not a righteous life. But what's the bottom line is you're not getting what you want. And there's a huge control thing here, okay? People want to be in control. They don't trust God. They trust themselves. So what they see is the right way. And it's very unfortunate because even if they're right and the way is right, they've destroyed their credibility on how they've communicated. Who's willing to listen to you if you're ungodly in how you speak? And so what I have to do is learn to present myself to the family and say, okay, how I speak is going to influence the rest of the family. Now, my daughters, they'll get into a fight and they'll say stuff that's disrespectful to Barb. I am all over that. Why? Because if they're going to say it to Barb, they're going to say it to the teacher, they're going to say it to the coach, they're going to act that way. And people need to learn how to be respectful in how they speak. And we've been doing this for so long, I don't even need to give a warning. I say, okay, this is taken away. Or you're grounded. And they realize, okay, yeah, I crossed the line. It's unacceptable. But it comes down to they want to be in control. Your kids are going to want to be in control. If you haven't learned that, that's what's going to happen. They'll, you know, have these tantrums. They'll do all sorts of things to get what they want. And if you get sucked into that, it can get a lot worse versus being a calming force. And you calm things down, and everything's okay. And then, that's not how it works. But anyways, nice thought. Do you want anything to add on to that? No? Okay, Barb and I. Practicals. Here are a bunch of practicals. We talk daily, and not just once, a lot. We talk a lot. In the morning, we're talk about, I mean, we've got our so many irons and so many fires, which is constantly talking. And then when I go to run an errand, she'll be calling me, and we'll be talking. And that's just how it is. When we go to bed, we usually spend 5, 10, 15 minutes talking. All right? I've learned in all my incredible wisdom that that makes my wife secure. It's taken me 20-some years, but yes, it makes her secure and confident when I communicate to my wife. It's just got to be. She feels very disconnected if we haven't talked. I've also realized that Barb's a wise woman. She has a lot of wisdom. And she makes me look great. You've often wondered why I'm the way I am? Right there. No, she helps me see things from angles that I'm unaware of or I haven't thought of. And that just builds the family up. So in my mind, it's not, okay, let's just talk. All right, you need to get this time. Let's talk so you can get through this, whatever you're feeling. No, that's not it at all. It's, I value the time. And our relationship is such where we want to be together. We want to talk, okay? Barb does not like surprises. Wives, do you like surprises? Oh, honey, the guys are coming over for the game in 2 minutes. Can you cook up some chili? Huh? Wouldn't that be fun? And then if you want to, you can join us. Isn't that exciting? She doesn't like surprises. My daughters don't like surprises. What do you mean? The teens thing is at our house tonight. I have to clean my room? What are you talking about? You know, surprises. They don't like it. And we need to, when we have our family meetings, and we do it all the time, we talk about everything in future events. This is what we're doing. This is what we're thinking. Let's talk about it. And they feel very secure with that. Every week we go through a schedule. We haven't been doing so well lately, but we normally go through. We pull out our calendars and we talk it through. All right? That just destroys a lot of opportunities Satan has to destroy our communication, our time, and all that. We talk about finances. I let her know where we're at. She knows what she can buy, what she can hold back on. Then we pull out our to-do lists. All right? Hey, I have a 3-page to-do list all the time, at least 2 pages. And we talk through it one by one. And a lot of my to-do lists, believe it or not, affect her. Imagine that. So, I talk about it. We talk through the kids, what they're going through. We talk through our ministry, all the challenges there, and how do we handle this, and how do we get the ride for that, and talk that all through. And if we can't come to an agreement on something, we call someone and get advice. But it takes a lot of humility, and that's what this passage is about. God opposes the proud, gives grace to the humble. It takes a lot of humility to just say, hey, help me. What do you think? It takes humility and wisdom to take the time to talk it all through. Is this making sense?
Oh yeah, it's great.
You gotta want what's best for the marriage. If you're gonna do it, you gotta forge it. It's not gonna come easy. And there's gonna be a lot of denial of self to make this work. Now, Barb and I, our first 2 years of marriage were horrible. We fought all the time. I mean, it was ugly. Alright? And we really didn't have any discipling, okay? So we were shooting from the hip. I had marriage, like I knew my marriage, and my parents, it was like crazy at our house. I mean, my parents were divorced, but I think I was 16, but just the communication, how you raise a family, I just didn't know, all right? Her family was like the Waltons. Good night, Bob. Do you guys know the Waltons?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right, I just didn't know. Anyways, so you're trying to bring two marriages together, two families together. It's like, what are you doing? What do you think? And so we get into these fights, and my response was, I'm out of here.
Whoa.
And I would just go, you know. And that would infuriate her, because you're just taking off. Yes, I am.
Yeah.
I'm out of here. Maybe you'll cool down, and then so on and so forth. That's how I handled it, because I didn't know what else to do. Not a wise thing to do. Okay, okay, your discipler and your wife's discipler is not a tool. What do you mean? It is a tool to help your marriage, but it's not, if you don't do this, I'm going to call your discipler. And they're going to get at you, kind of thing. No, probably not the wisest thing to do. You can't use that or the kids as a tool, okay? People have done that. Here's another thing. No hidden issues. Okay? No ungodly agreements. If you don't go over here, then I won't go over there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
No. We need to talk it through, deal with it, because it's gonna come up. Somehow, some ugly way, that thing, it's like that alien, it's gonna come up, rear its ugly head, and then you're both in trouble. No. That's why in the kingdom, a lot of the marriages in the beginning are hard, because you're for the first time you're dealing with issues when before you did not. Quick to listen. You've got to be aggressive in wanting to hear what they have to say. Deceit is not an option. All right? And a lot of people, oh, I would never lie to my spouse. I would never do that. But there's a tendency to tell things, the story, a different way to make it not look so bad. You know, Tracy was so funny the other day. Dad, you wouldn't believe how much money I saved today. Oh, you know when they start with that, you know, how much money did you spend? Yeah, but I had this coupon, I had that coupon. I just, you'd be so proud of me. That kind of thing. So I'm glad she's learning that. That's awesome. But it's like, okay, what are we talking about money-wise here? What are we talking about here? And we can make things try to sound better than they are. All right? That's a form of deceit. Exaggeration is a form of deceit. Not telling the whole story is a form of deceit. There should be no gray area, because it's going to come back to bite you. Then you need to say how you really feel. You know, you're in a conversation, and the husband knows what the wife wants to say, am I right? Okay, and so you can just say that, end the discussion, and I can go do what I want to do. All right? Have you been there? You guys are kind of quiet today. I don't know if you're bored. But, yeah, you know, no, this is how I really feel. And it's like, do I want to go there? Do I want to open this area of our lives? And it's going to get ugly, And sometimes it's not wise. You know, I mean, if she's about ready to go to work or something, oh, honey, by the way, on the way out, okay, thank you, have a good day. No, wrong answer. But you got to deal with those things. How do you really feel? And you don't say what you think they want to hear. You say the truth. In James chapter 3, it talks about the tongue. You know? And he talks about, in chapter 3, starting in verse 4, we'll just jump down to verse 5. It says, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. Wow! You know, it's like, man, what's he saying? You know, bottom line, you got to be careful about what you say. Because once you say it, you can never take it back. The damage is done. And many of marriages are scarred because someone didn't think before they spoke. You can tear each other down. It can be horrible. You know, body language is also a way to communicate. You know, you can give that glare. Husbands, do you know the glare from your wife?
Yeah.
Huh? Wives, do you know your husband's look?
Yeah.
You know, my daughters give me a hard time. They say I have this Hitler look to my face. Hitler. I'm like, what? In fact, Candace said I should cut off this part right here. Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
But I thought, what is it that I'm doing that they're saying that?
Let's see the look. Come on.
I don't know what it is. I like this. No. Like this. No. And I just, you know. So I guess it's at different moments and moods or something. I think I, you know, give one of those, you know, what are you doing kind of looks. But we don't realize that.
Right.
Now, there's a lot of times Barb will say, are you angry with me? And I'll say, I'm not angry at all. You look angry. And I'm like, no. Now, she has a decision to make. Either I'm really angry and I'm lying to her, or I'm not. And she's had to learn to accept that if I say I'm not angry, all right, I'm not angry. And now you guys are thinking, what's he doing? You know, Hitler. But, you know, those things come out. And it may be times of stress or duress or something's going on. And we all do this, all right, to different degrees. And when somebody says something, hey, you look this way, then, all right, well, what's going on in my mind? It may not be that I'm angry, but there's something there that's going on. Other practicals. When you're in your discussion, all right, you got issues, you want to talk, draw each other out. Okay? When you talk, don't assume, husband, you've heard 2 minutes, you know what the issue is, let's fix her. Okay? Wrong answer again. No, you got to keep listening and drawing. And a lot of times, you know, we try to figure out, you know, let's say the husband's angry and this and that, and the wife is saying, well, this is what I see, blah, blah, blah. Well, you shouldn't feel that way. And the husband says that. Husbands, have you said that to your wives? Wives, to your husband? You shouldn't feel that way. Well, I do. And a lot of it is what they feel at that moment is what's truth to them. And you could say, no, that's not true. Look at this, look at this, look at this. Well, that's how I feel. And that's where you got to work with. That's where you got to start. You got to say, okay, you feel this way. All right, let's understand it. Let's help you through this. Versus, no, you're wrong. Shouldn't feel that way. Deny yourself. Now, there's times when we need to deny how I feel, right? But stuffing it is not the answer. Why? Because it's going to blow. All right. Do you have anything else to add? Go ahead.
Well, there's several thoughts actually I had. You know, we can, in the marriage, you can have to-do lists. You're going to have to-do lists the day you die. You know, I mean, so you can't live off a to-do list. That doesn't make a marriage. just the fact that you can check things off or you've communicated it. And once you get, but if you don't do those things, you're going to have more problems. So it's like you have to do those things, but once you get past it, there's a whole other level of communication that you get down to, the feeling level. And Jay talked about that. But you have to do those, all the other things, the scheduling, the get the things done. But then you also have to get to the feeling level. And sometimes that's the challenging level to get to, because all the other things can take up all the time or all the energy. And so it's taking the marriage to a whole different, I want to say to a different level of patience or a different level of commitment, yeah, effort. Because you can't build your marriage on your to-do list. You just can't. You have to get deeper than that, and that takes so much more time and so much more energy to do that. And then when you throw the kids' schedule into that mix too, it just multiplies and magnifies everything even more, and you have to work even harder to get to that level of feelings. That's why at the end of the day, you know, after all the dust is settled and everything that you can get done in a day. You didn't get everything done, but that you just finally said, that's enough, I'm going to bed. You know, that's when we take time to talk. And sometimes, you know, we're not always home at the same time, and Jackie and I were actually talking about this today, is usually I don't go to sleep till he's home. For some reason, I can be ready for bed and everything, but I just don't really fall asleep till he's home. And sometimes, it's often we'll still talk when he gets home, because it's like the completion of the day. There's all this, the rush and everything that's gone on, but that still unites you on the feeling level, the emotional level. And we've had to learn to do that, though. That's not the normal way that we function. We had to train ourselves to do that, to talk at that level, at that time. And different people, it's different times of day. You have to figure out what works for you. But you have to have that time where you connect at the emotional level and bond at that time. Because the to-do list will consume you forever, and the schedules. You know, we used to come home from church on Wednesday night. It was back when men and women met at the same time. We didn't always have the alternating nights or Wednesday nights. And we'd come home, and on a Wednesday night was a consistent pattern that we'd always have this big fight on a Wednesday night. And I was like, why is this happening? I mean, after a few weeks, you're like, this is really weird. And, you know, we started talking to the people that were discipling us, and we said, why is this Wednesday night? What's that got to do with anything? And, you know, what happened, and they helped us to see, is they said, that's when you put your cross down. And I'm like, huh. What does that mean? You know, I understand what putting your cross down, but how does that apply to me? And basically they said, you know, you go to church, you've had the whole day, you've worked all day, you go to church, you give and you give and you give, and you come home, and nobody wants to give anymore. You both decided you've given enough, you don't want to give anymore, and so you have a huge fight. And everybody's selfish when they came home. It was just the two of us. There was no kids involved. And we were just really selfish. And, you know, once we saw that pattern, we're like, wow. It just happened to be on a Wednesday, but it could have been any other time, too, you know, where we both decided we weren't going to give anymore. And it wasn't like we came home and we both just checked in at the door and said, I'm not going to give anymore. It wasn't a conscious thought. It's just our selfishness just kicked in, and it was both at the same time. But we have to find those patterns that we have of when we decide we're not going to give. And maybe it's you both go to separate rooms and watch different TV programs, or you know, I don't know what it is, but it's a decision that you make in your marriage where you're not going to give anymore.
Yep.
And you're not going to listen, you're not going to interact, you're just not going to, whatever it is. And you have to see what those patterns are in your life. Yep. Ours just happened to be the Wednesday night when everything came out, but it's different times for different people. But you have to break those patterns. Because really, there's no time not to give in your marriage. There's not. Even if you go on a date, it's not a time for that person to give to you. It's a time for you to give. And when you're dating, you did that. You know? You did that. You gave to each other. You were fired up. It's kind of like how Jay started the class. You know, you went that extra mile. But then somehow when you get married, you want to, you know, take a break.
Yeah.
Because it takes a lot of energy to give 24/7. It really does. I always thank God that we can get a night's sleep because, you know, you get to go to bed. And I'm always grateful for that. My dad always says, whew, you get that time just so you can start over again. You know, but I'm grateful because it does give you that chance. But we cannot put our crosses down. We just can't. We have to be willing to give at all times. Our first daughter, when she was born, I had worked full time, and after a year, we had decided that I was going to stay home, and we had our own business. Jay had the business, and so I quit my job and I stayed home. He said, if you put half the amount of energy into the business, our own business, as you do work, we'll do fine. And so we decided that I would do that. So we sat down every Monday morning. We'd have a staff meeting, him and I. And so we'd sit down, and he'd give me a list of things he thought I should do, and I had my own list, and I'd write down things I thought I should do for the week. And they were just fine lists. And so I would set out my week, and I would start on my list, and I would do whatever I thought on my list was really important. And we come together the next staff meeting, and he goes, how did these things go? And I honestly never even crossed my mind, really, to look at his list. To really even take it to heart what he thought was important to do. And we had the biggest fights on these staff meetings on Monday mornings because it took me the longest time to figure out what he thought was important, I needed to think was important. I did not have that mindset whatsoever. I thought I knew what to do. I was going to make this business go, and this was my area. I was going to do marketing, and I was going to do sales, and I was all about that. And it wasn't like my list was wrong. It wasn't like my list was wrong at all. But the concept that I didn't even consider his list at all was really wrong. That was the wrong part. And so I had to really get it on straight. And so that was with the business. But, you know, we can do the same thing with just running the household, working together in the marriage. We can think our list is better or our ideas are better instead of considering what the other person is saying or what's important to them. And I had to learn that what was important to Jay had to be important to me because we were a unit. We worked together. Not only did we work together in marriage, but we worked together in a business. And that just revealed my heart immensely. And I, really, to get broken of this, it was not easy. It wasn't. It was in me to the core that I knew what I was doing. And I'd come out of the business world and coming home, and there I was. And I had to, you know, I took a 24-hour time just to write down every critical thought I had a day. And I really didn't think it was a big deal. But I prayed about it, and I just wrote down, and I confessed it. And if it involved him, I couldn't confess everything because, you know what, I would have crushed him. I had so many critical thoughts. I didn't even get to go 24 hours before I was completely broken. I could not believe all the critical thoughts I had in my mind. He couldn't answer the phone right. He couldn't do anything right. And it wasn't what I said. I never said those things to him prior to that. I had all those thoughts. So if I'm that critical in my mind, you can only imagine how critical and how evil I was in my thoughts and my talk, you know, my speech to him as far as disrespect and stuff. So my point of what I'm trying to say is our communication starts in our mind.
Yep.
It starts before it ever comes out of our mouth. What we think, how we feel, all those things, it all starts. And so we have to start dealing at those level of thing, at that level, in order to deal and communicate in a godly way. But honestly, if you struggle with criticalness, I challenge you to do that, because I was so amazed in a terrible way of how critical I was. I could not believe it. I was broken. I was like, oh my goodness, my husband can't even move without me having a critical thought about him. It changed our whole marriage. It changed everything we did because of me. And like I said, it's not always what we say, it's how we say it. You know, you can communicate one thing to somebody, but if you're at the moment and how it's really communicated, how the tone, everything, you know, I could say, did you shut the door? Or I could say, did you shut the door? You know, I can say it all kinds of ways that make a big difference on how you say it. And yesterday we got with Bob and Marvin, and Bob was so funny. He said, "Yeah, I know, fine doesn't really mean fine." You know, like when someone says fine, they can say it all kinds of ways. And one of my daughters this morning was she was getting ready, and I asked her a question. She said fine. But I don't know how she said it, but I could tell she was not fine. And it made me think about that, but so often we say we're fine or we say something, but we're not. We're not communicating with the truth. So it's interesting. Fine does not really mean fine. That's what Bob learned. So that's a good thing.
Amen.
I couldn't imagine that Barb could be that critical towards me. Okay, let's not go there. Let's go to Proverbs, and we're going to close there. And really, we're going to end with any questions and answers kind of thing. Proverbs chapter 10. And there are just a ton of great passages on communication in Proverbs. I'm just going to show you a few of them that'll help us to actually, one of the things, if you can just write these down and put them somewhere to remind yourself, because I guarantee you that you will dramatically change your marriage if you change your communication. There's no two ways around it. I believe that, you know, right now Barb and I hardly ever fight, and I think a lot of it is due to this. Now our time is really there to encourage one another. Our communication is encouragement, inspiration, trying to help each other be better. And that's really what a marriage needs to be. We can't, we get beat up by the world every day. And so when we come home, we need the spouse to inspire and encourage rather than tear us down more. And so now we see each other as the protectors, the encouragers, all that. And that even encourages us to want to be together more often. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 14. It says, "The wise men store up knowledge, but the mouth of a fool invites ruin." And really, he's talking about just foolish talk can get you in so much trouble. People say the most foolish things. And, you know, sometimes you look at him and go, do you realize what you just said? It's like they're walking around with egg on their face, you know? Verse 19, we read this earlier. "When words are many, sin is not absent, but he who holds his tongue is wise." You know, there's another proverb that says, it's one thing to be a fool, it's another thing to open your mouth and prove it. You know, and really that's, you know, if you're smart, just shut up. You know, just be quiet, and you'll get less of a beating for things. Chapter 12, verse 18. It says, "Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." And really, that's an amazing statement. Does what you have to say heal people or destroy people? You know, we can tear each other down all the time, but think about it. Is your communication healing people? There's a lot of healing that needs to go on in this world. You know, a lot of damage. And we can inspire people. There's a guy that I'm studying the Bible with right now, and he is just down and out. And he's been through some bad situations, pulled out of this church, and he's just been beat up by all the things he's doing wrong. And all I have to do is, and Joe was with me. We just spent a good hour trying to inspire this guy, and he was blown away. And he thank you so much. He called me all the time thanking me for doing that. And what I realized is that's what this guy needs. This is what fires him up. And so every time I get with him, you know, he'll say, "Oh, this happened. I said, "Yeah, but here's the victories." And that's what people don't see is the victories in life. Chapter 12, verse 19. "Truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue lasts only a moment." All right? Truthful lips changes the world, you know, and it'll impact people. If you're going to lie about something, you know, people will dismiss you immediately, and they won't listen to you again. Verse 23, a prudent man keeps his knowledge to himself, but the heart of fools blurts out folly. You know, we have a game that we play with our family called Blurt. I don't know if you guys have ever played that. But you're supposed to say the first thing that comes, and some things, the first things you say is really out there. And really, when we communicate with one another, if you're just on an emotional level and you just, boom, respond, man, that's just flat dangerous. You can crush people. You can cause people to reject other things. And we got to understand the word, the tongue is a powerful tool, and we'll either use it for good or for bad. Chapter 13, verse 3, this is our last passage. He who guards his lips guards his life, but he who speaks rashly will come to ruin. It's kind of along the same lines of what we've been saying here. You got to think before you speak, and all that can happen. We can go on and on and on. There's a lot more stuff. I wanted to open it up for question and answers right now. Did you have anything else, Dad?
Well, I just thought of one thing.
Okay.
You made the comment that we don't fight often. Now we'll probably have all these fights. But, you know, it's not like the potential isn't there. I mean, there's times where there's boiling things. You can see things brewing, you know. And I think we've learned over the years is to be that, to rescue each other. You know, instead of becoming the enemy to each other, we've learned to rescue each other. Like, you know what do you need me to do? Or, you know what? You know, what's bothering you? Or, you know, asking the questions and not letting it get to the point of, you know, where you're just in this full-fledged fight. And I think that, you know, that comes from training. It comes from learning to trust. It comes from all those years of just taking and putting things into practice, investing in your marriage. Because if you don't invest in it, you know, our kids, you know, really in 5 years, probably all of them will be gone. You know, that'll just be a flash. And then it's just Jay and I, you know, woo, you know, and if we have, you know, and if we don't take that time to invest, we'll look at each other and we'll be like strangers, you know, we'll look at each other like our whole life couldn't be our kids. And even though kids are very consuming, we still have to take that extra time and that extra energy to invest in our marriage because they won't be there. They won't. They're going to go off and have their own families and stuff, and it's just going to be him and I till we die. And so we need to take that time and not take it for granted, but we need to learn to be the rescuers for each other.
Amen. Amen. One other thing about the kids, a lot of times they'll hope that we're not communicating. All right? That's their hope. They'll come to me and they'll say, hey, can I blah, blah, sleep over at whatever? And I'll say, well, let me talk to your mom. Why do you always got to do that? They even pulled the dad. You're the head of the family. That's smart, isn't it? You know, and I'll say, you know what? That's because we're unified. And then I'll talk to Barb and find out, oh, there's other things that happen. I didn't know. And so we've learned not to be manipulated by other people. You know, we've got to communicate. We've got to communicate.